Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore as Ty Cosgrove tweeted to Tara Reid, on one of Kevin Smith's new podcasts, his co-host suggested Kevin should hire you for his new movie, Moose Jaws, and Kevin agreed. How's it going?
Moose Jaws.
Moose Jaws.
So they called me in college. I'm good. I'm sad. I can't help but be sad. Like, I knew it was coming, and I'm not... I couldn't really do it. You know, it's not like it was a shock, but Steve Nash retiring did affect me in a weird way, particularly because I found out while I was sitting watching Disney on Ice this weekend. That was a weird, surreal experience.
You were in the ice rink.
Yes, I was actually skating with Tinkerbell. Yeah. And got the head of my phone, and she crashed into the wall, and it was very awkward.
Boy, those VIP passes are just incredible.
They're incredible. Disney on Ice was a weird experience.
I've never been.
Not surprising. And so my kid loves Cars. I mean, he loves the movie Cars. I've seen Cars 2, which is by far and away one of the worst movies I have ever seen.
Oh, no. I thought it was supposed to be good, or is just the first one supposed to be good?
The first one's really great. The second one is horrendous. There's a spy plot, and they travel. It's basic, and like they were building off of Fast and Furious 2 with Tokyo Drift.
Oh, no.
And it's just bad.
Of all the ones to build off of, and you went with Tokyo Drift.
And there's an annoying Italian character, much like Tom Fornelli. And,
sure.
And continuing my theme of hating all European sports figures. But anyway, so like it was just really weird seeing the stories that they played out. And like they did Toy Story was the big finale. And it was a very weird thing, but my kid liked it. Anyway, so I get the text. The update from NBA.com, Steve Nash announces retirement, and it just kind of just, like, stunned me. I was like, oh, man, like, Nash is gone. He's just never going to play again. Like, we're never going to see Steve Nash play basketball in the NBA again. And that was really just jarring because of – he was a huge reason that after college I made, like, basketball a big part of my life because of how he was – 7 seconds or less was transformative in the way that I watched basketball.
He was really something. I got the alert when I was I had a frustrating afternoon on Saturday. Very much gonna get a first world problem comment from somebody, but I live in the first world, so that's the type of problems I have. But I was driving around. My plan was I was gonna go park by the beach. I was going to run the bridge and then go hang out on the beach. And then that turned into, I'm just going to go hang out at the beach and not run the bridge. But I was driving around this area called Key Biscayne, and there were no parking spots in one lot, no parking spots in another lot. It's just packed over there. And so finally, like, there's a state park at the end of, I don't know if it's the end of like some peninsula or some drive or something, if you go down far enough. And so I just decided I'll go to the state park. I'll park for like, it's like $8 as opposed to the free parking. It'll be a nicer beach. And I'll go there and then just like crazy amounts of traffic to get into this park. And at a certain point, it was just like, this isn't going to happen. They're not even going to have parking spaces at this point. Like, the line was unspeakably long. Like, it was so far back from the entrance where it started that you just knew, like, this was not going to happen. So eventually, turn around, drive back. And it was like, I wasted, like, seriously, this is not an exaggeration. From leaving the house, driving somewhere that's, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes away, to getting back to the house after not being able to find a parking spot, it was an hour and a half. Like, I wasted an hour and a half just driving around looking for a parking spot, and then I went home. And so as I was driving back, got the alert about Steve Nash retiring. I was like, selfishly, this is kind of a perfect way to cap off this little outing.
Why does this always happen to me?
Why is it every time I'm trying to find a parking spot at the beach, someone retires? But he was just a fun basketball player. He was someone who, and this is very... You know, this is generalizing, this is stereotyping. He didn't look like he belonged on an NBA court. He just didn't. Like, he didn't seem particularly quick. He didn't seem particularly fast. He didn't jump very high. He just looked like a normal person playing NBA basketball, and he played it at a spectacular level. Like, he was really good his last couple of years with Dallas. He was a really good player. And then he goes to Phoenix and teams up with D'Antoni, and that really good player became a Hall of Famer almost instantly. And that's the thing that was so impressive about his time with Phoenix was it's not just that he got better and he was in a system that, you know, he could really run and take advantage of. It's that he became an all-time player. Like, that doesn't happen in the middle of your career.
With a back condition.
Right, with a back condition. And Amin Elhassan, you know, worked with him, loosely with the Suns for, I think he said, 6 years. He wrote a really good piece on ESPN, just kind of like what he learned from Steve Nash and that experience. And it just seemed like, that guy was just, it's the whole Canadian hockey player joke or whatever, but that guy was as tough as anybody.
Yeah, he really was. And I wrote about that over the weekend. You can find it at cbssports.com about much of what you just said. And not said as well, but I talked about, it's funny because the whole white guy unathletic thing, because people are so bore into the, rightfully, to stereotypes and the impact that race has on how we view players and athletes, there's this perception that that's just like, oh, you're just saying that because he's white. Well, no. Steve Nash legitimately was not athletic.
Yeah,
not on a comparable scale.
Yeah.
Like, cannot put, like, Russell Westbrook and Steve Nash are not part of the same species. Right. They are entirely different.
Well, to be fair, Russell Westbrook is a cyborg.
Right. He's an alien. But that's the thing, right? Is you never watch Nash and we're like, wow, he's so explosive. He was quick as all get out. And he was, that was the thing, is he was never really fast. He was just quick. He was so quick and had such control. And for him to do it, he's 6'3", which is not small. It's not tiny, but it's also not huge. And for him to do it with that frame and to have been as good as he was in so many areas, because he's remembered for the passes because they were awesome and fun to watch. But this is a guy that was 50-40-90 four times in his – four friggin' times! 50-40-90. That's nuts. I mean, his numbers really are crazy when you start to look at it. Like, none of the numbers you look at and go, holy cow, but – 2007, 19 points, 12 assists per game on 53-46-90.
That's insane.
I mean, really, just crazy numbers. And those Suns teams were unlike anything that we had seen before and really remain, even with the Spurs as beautiful as their ball movement is, that Suns team was entirely different from anything that we'd seen. And Nash was the engine of that. He was the atomic energy that made that go. And you talked about the toughness. I mean, that's a guy that broke his own nose to try and get back in the game. He came back, he took stitches over the eye. Like, he came back and played through everything. And that back condition, people really don't understand. And he never played it up to his credit. That guy, you would always see Nash on the sidelines laying on the ground. Like, this blows my mind. This is not talked about more. Nash would have to lay on the sideline and have the trainers work on him to keep his back muscles from spasming up while he sat on the bench in order to come back in and play. And he did that every single game. And for him to play at that level, like, back problems ruined the back half of Larry Bird's career. And Nash played, like, this stunned me when I looked at it. I was like, he's 41. That guy wanted to play when he was 40 and 41 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah, and he worked his ass off to try to get back. It just didn't work, Yeah. And that's the funny thing. And you look at his career, he finishes third all-time in assists, which you can say, oh, he played 18 years. Of course he should, accumulate that many assists. But if you look at it, he really didn't play that much his first 2 years in the league. He was backing up Jason Kidd in Phoenix. Yep. Doesn't really play that much those first 2 years. Then goes to Dallas, plays half a season with the lockout, or he plays the lockout season. And then he starts becoming like a regular starter at that point, like 4 years into his career. And then the last 2 years of his career, I don't think you can really count. So really over a stretch of 14 seasons, two of those being lockout shortened, this dude ended up being essentially the third all-time passer. Like, if you think about, like, how truncated his career actually is and what he was able to accumulate in that time, it's just so damn impressive.
via Basketball Reference, in 2007, the Suns had a 124 offensive rating with him on the floor.
That sounds like a lot.
And the response is going to be, yeah, what about their defensive rating? Well, okay, congratulations, you're that guy.
Well, okay, what, they were 13th or 17th in the league or whatever? Like, they were always in that kind of 13 to 17 range in terms of defensive rating, right? And they were a perfect example of realizing just how important offensive and defensive ratings were for evaluating teams, because you looked at it and they gave up, you know, the most points, or they were bottom five and most points given up. But when you looked at it on a per possession basis, they actually weren't that bad. And that kind of helped people realize, like, oh, right, defensive rating, offensive rating, this stuff matters.
Yeah. I'm just really grateful that I got to watch him play. That's my thing. I was in Austin, Texas, and I got done. I used to finish up poker games early, literally raising the blinds faster so that the games would end, which is not fair to my customers. But I did it because I was rushing to this great sports bar that used to be there in downtown Austin. And I would just sit by myself with a beer and watch the Clippers Suns series. And it was such good basketball. I'm watching that team. I remember watching I think it was a double overtime game versus the Mavericks and the Suns in 2007 in late March. And it was just unbelievable basketball. It was so much fun. I think it's interesting because the legacy thing obviously is overdrawn and there's a lot of questions. People get tired of it, and I get that. But I just do think it's interesting because with Nash, because he did affect people in a very visceral way that goes beyond how we kind of talk about the NBA in terms of won games and you know, toughness and championship glory and greatness. And it was just, for me, I don't know whether this is good or bad because people kind of look down on this term, but it's like – you're going to remember Nash because he was fun. And that's why you love sports, is because they're fun. And watching Nash play, that was about as much fun basketball as you could possibly imagine.
There were, during that era, during really any era, there are few moments as fun or as anticipatorily fun as watching Nash, like, kind of cock back the one-handed pass and seeing Amari Stoudemire, like, streaking down the middle. And, like, just knowing, like, Amari's about to murder the rim and Nash is about to drop this pinpoint pass to make it happen. And, like, just noticing that, like, there are times where you're watching a game and you just catch out of the, you know, off to the side, a dude, like, looping around on the right wing. And he's got, and you can tell, like, he knows he's got an alley-oop. The point guard knows he has an alley-oop. And you kind of, you build that anticipation as that guy starts curling around towards the hoop, and you're like, oh, here we go. And then they throw the lob and they throw the dunk. Nash was like that every play.
Yeah.
Like every play, he would cock back that right hand or the left hand and ready to deliver a one-handed bounce pass. And you just got excited. You got excited just from that motion. And it was like this Pavlovian effect of just, he was so fun. He was so efficiently fun. And it's gonna bother me that every time you mention he's a 2-time MVP, someone's gonna say, oh, well, Kobe deserved that one. Oh, Shaq deserved that. It's possible they deserved it. So did Steve Nash. And I will. There are not many arguments I give a damn about anymore in the NBA. That is always gonna be one where it's fine if you think Kobe should have won MVP. Do not tell me Steve Nash stole it or didn't deserve it.
Didn't deserve it. Yeah.
Because that's a load of crap.
Phenomenal player, a really interesting guy. Came out in opposition to the Iraq War at the time, which is really controversial. And God, if Twitter had been around, the meltdown that would have occurred. he was always interesting because he wasn't really, you know, he has all he's interested in film and books and all these things, but he's also really a private guy. Klosterman did a really interesting sit down with him, and Nash didn't, you know, really wasn't. Super into talking about himself, which I thought was always kind of cool. And you know, he did the documentary series about his last year trying to make the comeback with Grantland, and he's got some other film projects in the works. I think he's probably gonna be more involved in Canadian basketball.
That's another thing. I think that's a very underrated part of his legacy too. Like, Canadian basketball wasn't really a thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know that like, it's not like he fathered Andrew Wiggins, but you know, or any of these guys that are coming up, but to be that inspiration to draw athletes towards a sport in a country not known for that sport. And I know Naismith is Canadian and all that stuff, but like, you know, Canada was not really, you know, Rick Fox was maybe the most important Canadian basketball player up until that point. Maybe I'm forgetting somebody, but then Nash came around and he just like, he had that impact, and he is the, I guess, the godfather of Canadian basketball in terms of players. And, you know, someday that face, the face of Canadian basketball will probably be Andrew Wiggins, but Nash is always going to be that guy that kind of set that path for everybody. And that's a big deal in the grand scheme of, like, basketball legacy.
Yeah. So, cheers to Nash. Great career. Thanks for everything.
It truly was a joy watching him play.
Yeah. You know, you were friends with his game.
Yeah.
Kevin Love, not so much friends with LeBron.
I'll
catch you up.
Yeah, I'm not. I was doing videos and I was driving home and I noticed the emails on our thread, and apparently, Kevin Love and LeBron James aren't best buds. They're not going to. Well, I don't know that for sure. I was going to say they're not going to Furious 7 together, but they might still go.
I mean, that's going to be an interesting question. When Kevin Love has his birthday party, will LeBron attend? Will he go to the skating rink? Or will he instead go to the movies with Sherry? This is an interesting question.
Is Sherry what we're calling J.R. Smith now? Never mind. That's unfair, because if you know if there's a party, J.R. Smith will be there.
That was a compound joke. Well done. M1. So, Love's doing a bunch of promotion because he's the face of basically of chocolate milk. Apparently there's a whole thing about, generally speaking, chocolate milk.
I will say chocolate milk is delicious.
It's awesome. It's so good. And so he's doing a bunch of interviews, including he spoke with our own Anand this morning. And so that'll be up on CBSSports.com. Later you can look for a Q&A in which he talks about Russell Westbrook but does not insult LeBron James in any way. So
Or does he? Oh, is there a veiled message that we have to read between the lines for? The
numbers may surprise you. But he did talk to ESPN's Mike and Mike, anyone on the Dan Patrick Show. He did the radio tour this morning. And first off, this is what I love. His comments, if you're a Cavs fan that wants to refuse to admit that anything is bad and say that everything is overblown and it's all good, I don't care what, like, this is all ridiculous, just the media making a story out of nothing. The big thing is, he said, quote, "I plan on being a Cavalier either way," which is genius. And I talked about this in the post I wrote, which you can find on CBSSports.com, that talks about, you know, Marc Gasol came out and said, look, I haven't ruled out New York because I haven't thought about it. I really haven't thought about it. I honestly do believe Gasol, by the way, because the guy is just not wired to be like, what's my brand going to be? Like, that's just not
how he'll probably give it a week until after his season's done, and then he'll start looking at it.
Right. He'll just be like, okay. So, but Love is saying, I plan on being a Cavalier either way. And I've maintained this. If you leave Cleveland or you leave wherever, you're going to get torched. Those fans are going to hate you. Critics that do this kind of thing on various talk shows are going to say you're a quitter or that you couldn't leave that team or that you abandoned. You're going to get blasted regardless. That is going to be the story. So if you say something and then do the opposite, nobody's going to call you a liar. They'll call you a liar on the side while they're actually talking about the fact that you decided to sign somewhere else. So just say you're going to re-sign. And then if you don't, just say, I changed my mind.
Right.
Because half of the people that would have been mad at you would be like, well, that's fair. I understand that. Things change. What? That happens to me. I was going to move to Milwaukee or whatever. I don't know why anyone – Milwaukee sounds nice, actually. But I was going to move to a certain place, and then, you know, my wife got a job elsewhere. Oh, things changed. Okay. So just do that. But – in doing so, he was also asked about his relationship with LeBron on Mike and Mike, and he said it was, quote, fine, and then said, you know, we're not best friends, we're not hanging out every day, but we see each other every day, we're at the practice facility, which, by the way, I would like to note, not exactly, that's something to brag about, Kevin. So, like, if you were not seeing each other at the practice facility or during games, that might be a problem, and because LeBron is then avoiding you.
They've been telling me different practice times. I show up, and it's just one-on-one stuff.
Quote, whether we're on the road or going to a game, he said, quote, I think our relationship is also evolving. I can say the same with each and every coach, Coach Blatt, and each and every player on the team, but that's part of the NBA. This is a really reasonable, fair comment from Love, and I said as much in the post talking about how, look, I've worked with a lot of people that I haven't gotten along with and done good work, and I'm sure that most of you listening have too. You don't have to get along with a person or be close to them or be friends with them in order to do good work together. They're both professionals. They're both going to come to work. They're both going to go to the game, and they're both going to play really well until the fourth quarter when David Blatt puts someone else in. Like, that's just what's going to happen, and they're both going to be able to produce. Love played in the fourth quarter of the last couple of games. He was helpful in that win over the Bucks in terms of spacing the floor. His numbers are okay. They're not terrific. They're definitely a dip from where he was. He's shooting 42% from the field. But it's fine. It's not a big deal. I will, however, say James has always been a guy that loves teammates because this has been his family since he started organized basketball. And that fills a big hole in his life from how his life was growing up. And he's talked about that in interviews before. It's one of the reasons, like, I don't like to, you know, I understand the temptation not to want to psychoanalyze players, but that's something pretty evident, is that LeBron really cares about his teammates. That's why he was always dancing and doing so much stuff with the guys in Cleveland before he went to Miami. It's why he was, you know, it's one of the reasons he decided to sign with the Heat with Dwayne Wade, was because of their relationship. He got close with Mike Miller, who he brought to the Cavs. He got close with Ray Allen, who he tried to bring to the Cavs. He got close with James Jones, who he brought to the Cavs. He fosters that kind of environment. And the fact that Love is on the outside and has received criticism from James in the form of that tweet, regardless of whether or if you believe that was about him or not, I don't see how you can say it's not, does indicate that there's something there. And James, as a leader, probably needs to have a sit down with Love and be like, this is the deal, man. Like, I think you're great. I think we could be awesome. You need to play. Whatever his problem is, they should probably get it out, because I think that would alleviate some of the concerns. Love maybe is part of the issue too. We're not in a locker room. So maybe Love's the problem. Maybe Love's standoffish or just doesn't vibe with him. But, like, there is talk of this Instagram photo, by the way, Harper, that they took it. Like, James, after every win, takes
how angry am I going to be at this nonsense?
You're going to be pretty mad. Okay. Like, it's going to be like an 8.
And this isn't a Kevin Love thing. This is just a we're analyzing Instagram videos thing.
Right. So, and actually, Cleveland.com really did a good job of breaking down this entire thing. Who was it? It was Joe Varden did a really good job. So the first photo that he took was in, like, the hallway before getting on the plane. What's the thing that you do that you take?
The jetway?
Yeah, the jetway. And, you know, it's click up, which, by the way, LeBron, come on, man. You're over 30. Like, don't click, really?
Hey, he's after 27 or 28 years of his life, he's trying to pretend like the land was something. So I don't think click up is that bad.
Hashtag the land, hashtag we here, hashtag roll with us. Okay, and in this photo is Kyrie, JR, Tristan, LeBron, but there's also Perkins and Mozgov. So it's pretty much every relevant Cavalier except Kevin Love. There was, like, talk of, like, you know, why isn't Kevin Love in there? Varden smartly then posted, this was posted 2 weeks ago, and it's a photo from the plane with Kevin Love's arm around LeBron. So the photo thing's stupid.
I remember that photo of everyone on the plane. I think Love is wearing, like, a Menace hat or something. Love's clearly photoshopped into that photo.
And so the photo thing, I think, is stupid. I said this on Twitter. I said, you know, I'm not in any of my wife's Instagram photos. That's not a problem. And I was like, oh, no.
I think we just uncovered the relationship here.
Problems on the home front. But I do think, like, to me, there's a problem with the fact that LeBron's basically going out of his way to show how buddy-buddy he is with J.R. Smith, because J.R. Smith is in every photo he takes.
Hey, J.R. is a fun guy.
Apparently. This is what's amazing, is Cavs fans are constantly telling me, like, you don't have to worry about J.R. because LeBron's going to take care of him. And I just keep being like, you realize there's the opposite effect there, too. J.R. is constantly talking to LeBron. This is concerning to me. It's fine when you're in Cleveland or Milwaukee, but when they go to Miami for a 7-game series, I'm concerned. So again, to wrap up, I don't think it's, like, a major deal. I do think that there's a relationship that isn't perfect. It doesn't have to be a problem, but it could be better, because he treated Chris Bosh differently. He talked up Bosh a lot, and Spo treated Bosh a lot differently than David Blatt did.
I think Bosh is a easier, more likable guy. And I don't mean that as, like, a pejorative towards Love, but I just think that Bosch is openly, like, affable. He jokes about stuff. He's just different in the way he talks and his perspective and stuff. I think that matters to guys. Whereas Love is very much, you know, not aloof, but, you know, dry sense of humor. You know, kind of, at least since he got fed up with talking to the media a couple years ago, he's definitely been a guy that's just, like, much more, you know, business-like and doesn't let a lot of personality out. And I doubt that that's across the board with his teammates. That's probably just a media thing. But at the same time, I think that it's just two very different personalities. Like, if you asked me if I wanted to hang out with Chris Bosch or hang out with Kevin Love, I'd pick Chris Bosch every time. He just seems like a much more fun guy.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the whole Love Cleveland thing, he obviously needs to play better. I do still think, like, his production doesn't matter nearly as much as the threat, at least this year. I still think it's unreasonable to think the Cleveland Cavaliers should be title favorites. You know, they should be expected to win a title this year. I just, anytime team comes together in that first year, especially with the changes they made halfway through the year, that's just asking a lot to build continuity out of nowhere. And so I it doesn't mean that they have a pass necessarily. I just think, like, we got to be realistic about this thing. What helps them is that they're in the East, so their road to getting to the finals and then being a title contender is much easier than any other situation in the West. But it is a thing where, as long as the threat of Kevin Love exists, opposing teams, opponents will respect it, and that will help stretch the floor. Now, if you get to a point where the production is so inconsistent that the threat stops being there, then it's a problem. And you know, him not being a good defender is obviously an issue that has led to some fourth quarter stuff, I'm assuming. He's not hitting shots. He's still got to be able to find other ways to contribute. For him, naturally, that's rebounding. That's moving the ball. He probably needs to hesitate less when he's shooting in that system. Like, kind of needs to just catch and shoot. But I don't know. I don't think there's a ton on the court to really freak out about until we cross that barrier. Now, maybe some people are saying, no, we're crossing that barrier where he's not really the threat that defenses should expect him to be. And that's fair. I don't agree, but that's, you know, that's another conversation to have. But whether they're friends or not, like, I don't know. It just doesn't interest me. And it's a point where, unless they're openly fighting on the court and it's detracting from the team, or they're open, or they're, you know, privately fighting and it's seeping out and you know, it's starting to become a distraction. Unless it gets to those points, I don't know. I mean, they're probably not going to be best friends.
Right. And I don't think that they necessarily need to be, but I do think that there should be a point where, I guess from my standpoint, it's Kevin Love is a good enough player to where he should not feel like he is as much of a afterthought.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree with your point. Like, LeBron is the leader of this team. He's the best player. Like, he is that guy that he should kind of pull Kevin Love aside if he hasn't already and be like, hey, snap out of it. We need you. Like, you need to buy in more. You need, like, instead of, you know, being passive aggressive and putting tweets out there that could be construed that way. Like, he should, and maybe he's done this and that's just us speculating that it hasn't happened or wondering if it's happened. And that's irrational or not the proper way to go about this. But let's say he hasn't pulled Kevin Love aside and been like, hey, snap out of it. We need you. Like, you need to get on board with everything. You know, that talk should happen and doesn't maybe, like, maybe it needs to happen more than once, and if it hasn't happened more than once, you know, like, you need to kind of, the people that have to catch up to you, and Kevin Love clearly has to catch up to LeBron James, you gotta give him a kick in the ass. I don't have a problem with that. And if he can't take it, then that shows you he shouldn't be on the team.
Yeah, I think they've been involving him more. I noticed in the Bucks game, they actually ran some really cool stuff with basically, like, Love was doing a really good job of running the floor and sealing early. And so the Bucks would have to send a secondary defender, and then Kyrie would go ahead and feed Love and then immediately pass back out, and the spacing was incredible. Like, so yeah. They're involving him more. The fact that they're not constantly running him in pick and rolls still bugs me, but they've been doing that more too. They're moving in a direction in which I have fewer and fewer complaints about their offense. Their offense is moving dramatically in more of a, okay, this is how it should look kind of thing. And that's awesome. That's good. Yeah. It's like,
and I, yeah. And I think like all season long, I've been pretty consistent saying Kevin Love should be the number two guy on this team. Like, I just think he's talented enough. I think what he does on the floor is more than good enough. He has the skill set to do it. He's a willing passer. Like, he's a great second guy next to LeBron. And while I still believe that, I love what I've seen out of Kyrie this year. And if it ends up being that, no, Kyrie should have been the number two guy all along, and it ends up that attack, you know, matters so much, then by all means, do that. I will, like, as much as I think I think Kevin Love has been misused this year by David Blatt and by LeBron and by everyone, the results for Kyrie, and it's not just like the 57 or 56 point games, it's just he just looks like one of the most stressful guys to have to defend in any you know, in any setting on a basketball court. Like, I would be terrified trying to defend that guy.
Yeah. The other thing, he was asked if LeBron is the MVP, and he said Russell Westbrook.
All right.
I'm sorry. I should clarify. He was asked about the MVP race. I was getting the impression he was kind of asked if LeBron was, but his answer was about, like, they've both obviously been great, but I think when you look at what Westbrook has done, and I was like, that's not that's not great.
Hey, you know me. I'm all for more chaos.
Because in part I was thinking, like, what if LeBron wins?
Oh,
and
man,
makes all his teammates.
And he brings everyone up and says, Kevin, why don't you sit with the reporters?
They're both having an MVP-type season, but I'm going to go with Russell Westbrook because he, every single night you're looking at a stat sheet, they're fighting for a playoff spot with Serge Ibaka going down, Kevin Durant possibly being out the rest of the year, and him still going out there and fighting for his team and winning and fighting for that 7th and 8th spot. I think Russ is arguably having the better season.
I mean, you can't fault his reasoning, whether you agree with it or not. Those are good reasons. It's just one guy's on his team and one guy was his college roommate.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, I kind of want LeBron to win now just because of how great that situation would be. That's a tough one. I mean, he's kind of right.
Well, he can also, like, he definitely can relate to what Westbrook has done in terms of, like, oh my God, all these guys are going down around me. I've still got to be the guy and lead. Now, he wasn't able to lead his team to the playoffs, but now he can see Russ actually doing that, and I bet that impresses him because he can relate to that situation of having to fight like that.
Would also be great if he was like, well, you know, Westbrook didn't take 2 weeks off just to go rest in Miami and left all of the rest of us to get hammered with questions and get pounded by the Warriors by 75 points. So, you know, speaking of pounded by Warriors and the Spurs, and losing to the Thunder, man, I'm a little worried about the Hawks.
Are you worried?
I wasn't. Part of it's I saw them in Denver. This is the clouding. A lot of it is I saw them when the significant slide started, which is when they started that West Coast road trip. Denver was, I think, the first game on their schedule. They came in, and I was like, "This is gonna be great." Like, the Nuggets are playing better. The Hawks should be up for this game. They're closing in on a playoff spot and the one seed. This is gonna be great. And instead, like, the Hawks just looked like they just did not give a crap and were completely out of sorts and just really just rolled the ball out there and let the Nuggets take it the other direction and thump them. I mean, it was just – they crushed them. And so I was like, well, okay, well, that's weird. I guess they just are still kind of coasting and couldn't – and they expected to lose in Denver because they usually do, even though it wasn't on a back-to-back. But okay, whatever. Well, then they go to Golden State and, you know, Korver goes down, and that's obviously a big deal. But then the Warriors annihilate them, and I was like, well, look, they won the first game, and neither team's really playing for much, and Mike Scott's out, and Thabo's still out, and Korver's out. You know, Klay Thompson's not playing. That changes the dynamics. Like, okay, sure. Well, then they lose to the Thunder and giving up a lead. All right, well, you know, Westbrook's unstoppable, and that's going to happen on the road. And then they go home on Sunday, and I know that the first game home from a road trip is tough. That's the one caveat that I kind of have. That I'm like, well, maybe it's fine. Because a lot of teams have struggled in that first game back from the road trip. Because it's almost like you're so glad to be home you still don't bring the energy that you need to. But they came back from that road trip, and on Sunday, the Spurs jumped down to a 26-6 lead and just pounded them into oblivion. Al Horford is not good right now, and that's a big problem, especially when Jeff Teague isn't either.
Yeah, they. I mean, they're definitely not playing well. They are really struggling, and they're not
great, Bob.
Yeah, not great, Bob. and they're not doing the things that made them so successful in the first three and a half months of the season. I'm not worried because it's a tough part of the schedule, and so I'm okay with teams regressing when that stuff happens, and they're not at full strength, and it's not the losses that obviously concern you; it's the way they're losing, right? So I get all that. I also think that this is their time to get healthy, and sometimes when you use that time to get healthy, it's it throws off your continuity, it throws off your system, it throws off just the way you play from night to night. And because of that, you know, if they're still playing like that 3 weeks from now, I'll really be concerned, because this should be a thing where they use the next week or so. I guess they've been using a week, so they use like another week or so. They get healthy, then they get everyone revved up, and in that last, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 games, they should be really moving back towards that team that we saw in December, January. So I guess my uneasiness with them, my caution with them is put on hold for now. But yeah, I mean, Al Horford does look awful. And I don't really know what it is. And Teague, I don't know if the Teague thing is that he is bad or they're trying to give Denny Strads, as I say, more opportunities so he gets more comfortable. And so that maybe that opportunity throws Teague's play off a little bit. Like, I'm not quite sure what it is. But yeah, those two guys do look bad.
They are three. Their magic number is three. So either three wins or Cleveland losses from locking up the number one seed. Like, I mean, it's done. Like, they're going to get it. They can get it as early, I think, as Wednesday, is as soon as they can clinch. They face the Magic, the Heat, the Hornets, Bucks, Pistons, Nets, Suns, Nets, Hornets. That's their upcoming schedule. All of those teams are somehow in the playoff picture, except for Orlando. But they're all under 500 at this point, except for the Suns. That's the only team that's over. Right, they have the Wizards, and then they finish with the Knicks, and then their last game's against the Bulls, which will not matter in any significant way. So they definitely have time to get on a little bit of a run here. But it's also just going to be like, well, look, you know, they're going to beat the Magic. That it would be very surprising to me if they lost the Magic. The Magic have been playing better, but still, the Heat game is a coin flip. Cleveland has Memphis on Wednesday. That's a coin flip. And then Atlanta has Charlotte on Saturday. So worst case scenario is they're going to have this thing locked probably Saturday. The Cavs will probably drop one in there somewhere.
Yeah, sometime this week.
Well, that's part of my thing is like, all right, so they're slumping into the end of the season. And then after they get the one seed, there's just nothing to play for. Like they almost have to rest them because you don't want guys to get injured. So you're not going to have much momentum going into that first round series.
I still think there's plenty you can do to build in that time frame.
You think?
I do. I do think that. And this isn't – we keep drawing the Spurs comparison, and it's relatively apt. But this is – you know, Mike Budenholzer, I think, has enough experience coaching either as a head coach or as an assistant in these type of environments where I feel confident he knows how to manage it.
Yeah. It would be good for them. Honestly, the Heat game would be a good win for them. To just
absolutely,
kind of come out and like just put on a hoaxing performance and really look good, and then they can kind of, you know, because part of it also is I was thinking about this, that you can look really awesome heading into the playoffs and then struggle immediately in the first game or series out the box. Like the Bulls looked unstoppable in 2011. They looked like they were going to run through everybody, and
they look unstoppables.
Yeah, well done, I guess. And then who was it? The Pacers. And the Hawks gave them trouble in the first two rounds, and then Miami pounded them into oblivion.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really translate. The Celtics wound up winning the title, but they really struggled versus the Hawks on the road in 2008. So it's really not guaranteed. And I will say this. I'm getting a lot of, like, they're going to get upset in the first round talk. This has got to stop because I had, like, an epiphany last week when I was like, well, you know, the Celtics with Isaiah Thomas and how they're playing. Or, well, you know, like, Dwayne Wade with, like, if he's playing like this. And I'm like, all these teams are under 500 by, like, 10 games. None of these teams are good.
Of the possible 1-8 matchups, you can throw Milwaukee in there, too. Milwaukee's not going to beat them.
No.
Miami, not going to beat them. Charlotte, not going to beat them. Boston, not going to beat them. Indiana, not a chance. Brooklyn, not a chance. None of those teams have a chance unless the Hawks decide to rest their starters in the first round. That's the only chance those teams have of pulling off the upset. Like, I just, a major injury or two aside, like, you cannot convince me that any of the, I mean, we gotta be honest about this Boston situation. They're not good. They're as good as the rest of the crap that's fighting for the 8th seed right now. That doesn't make you good. Yeah, that's like when someone looks awful, but they clean up a little bit. You're like, oh, you look really good for you. Like, that's like the Celtics look good for the 8th seed race right now. But yeah, they're still behind Charlotte, who has looked atrocious. I guess Miami is the best team of the bunch if they're healthy, even minus Bosch, because they have two guys who are potentially all NBA caliber with Wade and Dragic. But that team still has a lot of problems. This Milwaukee team is falling apart. Indiana's hoping that Paul George can come back. Like if they clap enough, he'll be Tinkerbell and he'll rise from this leg injury. Like, there's just nothing there.
Well, a lot of it also, and I learned this with the Pacers, keeping momentum is really tough.
It is.
And once you fall off, it gets really, you know, because the Celtics were playing really good basketball and were actually beating some good teams, and then they played the Spurs and the Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics aren't the Knicks,
right?
But they're not the Wizards either. You know, and like, think about that.
Yeah, like a good comparison. The Celtics are actually at this point after the loss to the Pistons the other night, minus 1.6 per 100 in the month of March. Like, this is a team with momentum, and they're minus 1.6 in the month of March. Where are they?
Okay, you look good for the 8th seed in the East.
Yeah. Indiana's plus 4.8 for the month, which is good. Miami is plus 3.2 for the month, which is good. The Nets are minus 4.4 for the month, and they're somehow still in this race. Yeah, so there is a significant gap for Highland. Yeah. And I will say, and I do have this strong belief, I've long said that the Bulls do not have a higher gear, and I might maintain that because that's how Tibbs coaches them, is they play with a playoff gear in the regular season. That's how they win so many games, and they have trouble hitting a higher gear. I feel that Atlanta has a higher gear it can hit. I think that it has a level of execution that they are saving for when they want to start, when they're going to make a title run.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, if you want to start talking about the Hawks don't completely dominate the first round, and then the Bulls or Wizards may find, you know, some luck in trying to upset them in the second round. Like, that's a conversation I'm willing to entertain, especially the Bulls. Like, I think the Bulls could do it.
Yeah, I've come back around. Like, I've done about a 720 on the Bulls, where I'm now coming back around and being like, if they just get healthy, if Tibbs just takes it a little easier and they get a little bit healthy, they could do this. You know, they really could make the Eastern Conference Finals. That's actually what's actually becoming really interesting to me, is I'm realizing if you're the Raptors, you've got a really tough decision to make because you have to get out of the first round. And the best way to get out of the first round is to get a higher seed and face a worse opponent. So the 3 seed, which is going to put you up against whoever, is very much preferable to falling to 4. But the 4 or 5 seeds are like, we're out of Cleveland's bracket. That's fine. That's where everybody's at right now, is as long as we stay out of LeBron's way, we can make the Eastern Conference Finals, and then we'll figure out what to do with LeBron.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you're Washington, you've actually – I realized last night, Washington's probably okay. Like, they're very unlikely to move up, even though they're only, like, I think 2 back. They're very unlikely to move up. They're pretty much – and they're not falling back because Milwaukee fell off a cliff. They're pretty much going to be the 5. But they feel good about a matchup with Chicago, which is the most likely scenario because of the Toronto's horrendously easy schedule. And then Washington's going to be like, well, look, if we get Chicago, who we feel like we match up with, and then we get Atlanta, who we feel like doesn't necessarily – that they don't have LeBron, Now all of a sudden we've got an Eastern Conference Finals matchup with LeBron. Like, that's a much preferable route, honestly, than saying, hey, we're going to get Miami and Dwayne Wade in a 3-6 in the first round and then immediately have to go face LeBron and the Cavs.
Right. Yeah, I'm not
it's tough because you don't want to say, like, the Hawks are the easy way to go, and I was making fun of that idea until this recent stretch, but now I'm honestly like, look, if the Cavs are getting better by every single game and they have the size now in order to match up with most teams, you do have to kind of consider the Cavs to be the team that you want to duck.
Absolutely. I mean, I still maintain, like, the Cavs are the team to fear in the East. As great as the Hawks have been, even when they're playing, you know, at their best, I'll still take LeBron. You know, because I don't think it's just LeBron. Like, I think they have a real team.
Yeah.
And a team that's solved a lot of the problems from earlier part in the season. They still have their holes, and they still have things to work out. And the Hawks probably play a more cohesive brand of basketball. But give me the star. Not just because he's the star, but because he's LeBron James. And the lack of playoff experience with the other guys, like, doesn't really concern me all that much. It doesn't mean Atlanta's an easy target, and it doesn't mean Atlanta wouldn't win in a series against Cleveland. I'll hedge with the star almost every time.
Yeah. A lot of interesting stuff going on. I mean, I wrote about this for Power Rankings, and I'm working on a thing for our first playoff update, which will probably go tomorrow. I tried to get it done last night. And I sat at my kitchen table at 1 o'clock in the morning after my first long workout since getting sick like 3 weeks ago, and was all like, I'll sit at the kitchen table so I won't recline and fall asleep. And then I woke up. I was doing the thing that you should do in school where you put your head down on the desk.
Oh, that's the death knell right there.
Yeah, I did that and fell asleep and was like, oh, this is just sad. I got to go to bed. So anyway, playoff update I'll probably post tomorrow. But one of the things I realized is I was like, we don't know any – I know that it sounds – on the surface, it sounds like, well, of course not. There's 26 days left. But I looked at this date last year, which was later in the season but only by a couple of days. We knew much more about who was going to be where in the playoffs last year than we do now. We know almost nothing about seeds 2 – well – in the West, we know nothing about seeds 2 through 8 in terms of who's going to be exactly where or who's going to make the 8 seed, Pelicans, Suns, or Thunder. And in the East, we really only know 1 and 2, and then 3, 4, 5 are up for grabs, and 6 through 10 is a complete cluster F.
Yes.
I mean, it is total chaos because the Nets have crawled out of the grave.
They're not going to do anything. This Nets team sucks.
Man, I know. I've been talking about how sad they are all year, but their schedule is so soft. Indiana has played like such crap.
Yeah.
Wade has got me in just in circles. I just don't know what to do because I'm emotionally drawn to the idea of Dwayne Wade can carry this team to the playoffs. But their schedule is really hard, and this team's been inconsistent all year, and they're playing Michael Beasley at center.
Like, yeah, you have a backup center. So it's totally cool.
You know, the Hornets, I read this morning, Number Fire has the Hornets and I believe the Celtics with the same percentage chance of making the 8th seed based off of whatever numbers that they're using. And to me, I picked the Hornets to win the division, and at this point, I am the one that's like, no, that team is not good. They're just bad. Like, they're just bad. The Celtics at least are a different team than they were earlier in the season.
Right. Yeah.
And there are pieces of the Celtics that I go, okay, yeah, I can get on board with this. Like Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Tyler Zeller, Jonas Derebko, Marcus Smart when he's not punching people in the nuts. Like there's pieces on that team I can get behind. But the Hornets have played collectively so bad, and yet they're in the 8th seed because everyone lost on Sunday.
That's the thing, is that this is just a crap factory for the 8th seed. Like, just an utter crap factory.
It's so bad. But you know what's funny, though? I still find it compelling, no matter how – and a lot of people are like, who cares? They're not going to win. I'm like, yeah, but making the playoffs is a big deal for some of these teams.
Well, it's obviously a big deal for Miami because they won't tank and they lose their pick. Well, for them and for Brooklyn, like Brooklyn's going to lose their pick regardless because they have to swap with Atlanta. But don't you feel so much better about giving up the 15 pick than you do like what 11 or whatever it would be?
Right.
Just because you at least got to say, well, we made the playoffs. And you know, like Charlotte – I wrote about this when they traded for Mo Williams, but like Charlotte, when they made the playoffs as the Bobcats years ago, ended up being just a nothing, like absolute nothing, because 2 years later they were the worst team in history.
Right.
And it's something where like they made the playoffs last year and you felt really good about the direction of that team and everything, and then they had Lance Stephenson in the offseason, and because of that, like, it's all right, now they can make the next leap, and now if they don't make the playoffs, it's not devastating, but you just lose that building block, you lose that momentum. And then Boston, I still think Boston is crazy for wanting to make the playoffs. Just rebuild.
Yeah.
Just do it. Sit out whoever you need to sit out. Like, just rebuild. Maybe Brad Stevens is too good of a coach to do that. But you look at that, and they clearly need it. And then I feel like, oh, and then Indiana. Indiana you can at least understand because they lost Paul George, right?
Well, and they also – they legitimately have to kind of sit there and be like, look, if we get George back, we were a playoff team last year, and we played well for stretches. Like, they have to feel like – They actually should feel like, you know what, I think we could actually make a run at somebody. We don't think, you and I are in agreement that we don't think it's true. But
right, because we don't think they're getting that Paul George back.
Right.
At least not this year.
Yeah, and it's just like, you know, if the team that had played from January 1st until about March 10th had been here the entire season and had been here the last 2 weeks, I'd feel a lot better. But I got excited about them and then sat down and watched them. I watched three of their games this weekend.
It's
just
rough.
Like, well, it's funny too, because usually the problem is I'm just like, oh, I remember these guys. They can't shoot anything. They just can't shoot. And then they go into that Nets game and they give up 124 points to the Nets. I'm like, the consistency is an issue. Like, that's a major problem. And that's really what's going to kill all these teams, is that none of them are consistent enough to reach the level of play that they're going to need to get through a playoff series. Because it sounds like you can just win a couple and be in good shape, but it's not. Because if Boston goes in and plays their hearts out and win and shocks whoever they face in game one, that is not the end of it.
Right.
You know? So I don't know. It's really compelling. And then the 8 seed obviously is just chaos, because I was like, well, there go the Suns. And then, nope, they played some fantastic basketball over the weekend. Phoenix is playing really well right now.
Yeah, they're on life support, but the heart is ticking.
The heart is ticking. Markieff Morris in particular deserves a lot of credit for what he's done over the last couple of weeks.
That guy's so good.
He is really good and has played at an exceptional level. And they're doing this without Brandon Knight.
Yeah.
So they are definitely not out of it. And it's weird too, because you just want to say, yeah, but the Thunder. And it's a really weird situation, because you're like, okay, if you take Serge Ibaka and Kevin Durant off the Thunder, how good are they? But then you realize that with the trades that they've made, they're pretty good.
They're deep. I mean, even with the injuries, they're still relatively deep.
You know, and I know that's going to make some people crazy, because Sam Presti traded James Harden 3 years ago, but he did a really good job in piecing this team back together this season. Like, adding DJ Augustine was a really underrated move.
How good has Enes Kanter been?
He's been fantastic, and that's the thing, is like, if they need to go with defense, they've got Steven Adams, and if they need to go offense, they've got Enes Kanter. They've got the versatility now to do a lot. I'm writing about this for Wednesday. Anthony Morrow, no one is really noticing. He is a monster part of what they do if they're going to make a run, Anthony Morrow is going to be a huge part of it. He dramatically changes the shape of that offense without Durant.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about Kevin Love being a threat for the Cavs because he can stretch the floor. Everyone's scared of Anthony Morrow getting an open shot.
Yeah.
Every defense is. Like, they respect the hell out of that guy's shot, and they should. And he doesn't do a ton outside of that, but you've seen in today's NBA, a guy that shoots like that, you impact the game immensely.
Well, and what's great, two things. One, he was kind of quiet for some of the year. He was in and out with some injuries, and he was just kind of quiet overall. And so I know I watched a lot of video. Teams are basically shading Westbrook constantly because they have to. They have to get three guys in front of him in order to stop him from getting to the rim. And no matter how much they're like, okay, I got to make sure I keep my eye on Morrow, they inevitably dig down. And this doesn't get talked about enough. a guy's confidence in the shooter that he passes to is huge.
Yep.
Because that determines whether or not he's willing to make that pass.
It's a quicker decision. It's a better pass. It's a quicker pass, and it gives the guy more time. And Morrow is one of those guys. A lot of shooters are, but Morrow especially. He's one of those guys that's so good at just sliding 2 feet to his right, and the defender, the help defender, kind of loses track of that, and that little bit of space gives him all the more time to get the and room to get that shot off. And you give someone like Morrow the confidence that his shot is not going to be affected, it's over.
Yeah. So that's really huge for them going down the stretch. We didn't really talk about the KD thing. I'd love to get into that another day, but really compelling stuff all the way through. And honestly, the West 2-7 thing is really crazy right now.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to finish where.
Memphis is likely to clinch tonight with a win over the Knicks. They're going to clinch a playoff spot, but they are still, to let you know, the Grizzlies have to, magic number for the 2 seed is 11. They have to get through 11 more wins or losses by Houston and the rest of the core in order to grab that 2 spot. And even then, it may not be a good thing if they wind up with the Spurs in 7th.
Yeah, and 11 is their magic number, and there are only 12 games left. I know it doesn't quite work like that, but that's not a lot of time.
It's nuts. It's really crazy. Portland is starting to fall apart, and the Clippers are getting better. They've won 4 in a row now. Yeah. San Antonio's won 3 in a row, and they've won, I think, 8 of 10, and their 2 losses were the Knicks game, which, whatever, and the Kyrie Irving Inferno game. Everyone's playing well right now in the West except for Dallas.
Yeah, New Orleans has fallen apart a little bit, but they should be mostly okay. They'll still be in the hunt, right, for most of the rest of the season.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really high on this team in theory, but even that, I admit, it just doesn't work. It just they need to make changes just because it's okay. Sometimes you try things that should work and they don't.
Yeah,
that's they remind you know what they are? They're those wolves. That's who they are. They're those wolves. The comparison is really pretty accurate.
They took a shot at what they felt could be the best way of bringing in a playoff-type team.
Yeah.
And it just might not be good enough.
And now they'll have to trade Anthony Davis to Cleveland.
Yeah. What a deal. Hey, you can get Kevin Love back.
I did mention this, by the way, yesterday. I was kind of thinking down the line of who stars are going to be and what storylines we could be talking about in the future. Imagine 7 years from now and Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis decide to play together.
Oh, so much length.
I mean, just score on that. Try and score on that. Kawhi was freaking awesome.
Hey, turns out a healthy Kawhi Leonard is pretty good.
He is really good. Super quick games?
Yeah, let's do games.
Houston's on the road at Indiana. The Rockets are a 1-point favorite. Houston has actually surprisingly not been great over the last week or so. Their game against the Suns was they really had trouble in that game.
I still like Houston here. I know Terrence Jones is out. Dwight Howard's not back yet, right? Josh Smith may be out. I still like James Harden in this matchup, and I think that just 1 point. I think they win. And I think they win by more than 1 point, so give me the Rocks.
Yeah, I'll go that route, too. It wouldn't shock me if Indiana hung, just because I like their, I like their size inside versus Houston, because they had some major problems defending the rim. I really like Mody Hunis, but he tends to space out a little bit, and there's a little bit, the Suns had a lot of opportunities to get to the rim and attack. And if you give Indiana layups, they'll only miss those 40% of the time.
Right.
So... Boston is taking on Brooklyn. A little surprising. The Nets are 5-point favorites here at home.
I did a video about this earlier. The Nets suck at home. They have the 4th worst offensive rating at home. They have the 4th worst point differential at home. They have the 7th worst effective field goal percentage at home. They have the worst record in the league against the spread at home. And on the road, they're 4th best. Give me the Celtics in Barclays Center.
They are 10-20 at home ATS.
10-20.
God.
Worst in the league.
We must not protect this house.
They don't care if the house burns. They didn't even get insurance on the house.
One thing to keep an eye on, and I know he's inconsistent. You might want to catch Brook Lopez if you get a chance to watch a little bit of this game.
He looks great.
He looks really great. He was killing Indiana. he's got that soft jumper going.
Yeah, he's moving. He just looks quicker.
Oh, this is absurd. I have to change my pick. This is absurd. I got to change my pick. Memphis is a 14-point favorite versus New York tonight on the road.
That's too many points.
It's too many. Memphis never beats a bad team by more than 10.
Yeah, that's too many points. Give me the picks.
Charlotte is taking on Chicago. This is a big game. This one is actually
huge.
A big game because Chicago is still in the race for that 2 seed. I actually kind of feel like Chicago may be the one team that's like, yeah, give us Cleveland in the second round. Like, we want them. Like, I could see them doing that, even though they're going to be like, yeah, let's go. God damn it, LeBron's good. Every time.
Oh, why are all of our players just falling down right now? Why do they all have dysentery?
Oregon Trail, Chicago Bulls. The Bulls are 7-point favorites versus the Hornets.
I like the Bulls to win, and if this was 5, I'd like the Bulls to cover. For some reason, 7 seems like a lot of points to me. I guess I'll go Charlotte because it's 7.
Minnesota is taking on Utah. Utah is a 10-point favorite. The Wolves have everyone questionable.
Yeah, Rubio and KG, I guess, are the most likely to play, and even they're highly questionable.
You live there. You know the team. You're good with their team people. Is there training staff? Like, is it?
No, I mean, they revamped some stuff when Flip took over.
Yeah.
I think there were, I don't know if there were legitimate questions before, but there were questions because Rubio went down and Kevin Love had the hand injuries and stuff. And, you know, the guys were just banged up and Peck's been injured with the ankle and all that stuff. But when Flip took over, they did take a better look at it. They do handle it a lot better than they did before. I don't think they're a problem. I think this is just a team that maybe wants a draft pick.
Maybe wants a draft pick?
Maybe wants a higher draft pick.
Yeah, I was wondering that if it was a tank job. And then Golden State's an 11.5-point favorite versus the Wizards at home.
Yeah, so give me the Jazz. And then the Wizards are so bad on the road against the spread, right? I think they're really bad.
Yeah,
like 13-20 or something like that, or I could be making that up. I could have just made up a number. I'll take the Warriors. 11.5 is a lot of points, but I think they kind of just pull away at the end.
Washington is the worst team in the league on the road. ATS 12-22.
Oh, I thought it was. Well, I guess Brooklyn can catch up. They just haven't played enough games.
Let's see how they are as a way dog, way underdog. 6-11. 6-11-1.
Okay. Yeah, give me the Warriors. Give me the Dubs.
Yeah, I'll take the Warriors. They just beat everybody at home by ridiculous amounts. Have you seen any good movie trailers?
Yes. Mission Impossible 5.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
I will cape for the Mission Impossible series. I really enjoy it. Even the second one. The second one's awful. The second Mission Impossible is so bad. But I still will. I'll lump that in there. But like, I think the third one's great. I think the fourth one, Ghost Protocol, is really good. The first one's obviously really good to me. So I'm legitimately excited to see Tom Cruise as Ethan Hunt.
I like two.
It's really bad.
John Woo directed that one.
Exactly. I don't think John Woo's a very good director.
I thought three was bad.
Oh, see, I love three. I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman is perfect as the villain.
That's true. No, I'm thinking of four.
I watched four on a plane, so it might be a really good plane movie.
I had the soundtrack to the first Mission Impossible. I was very excited for it.
Very good.
I don't know. It was very good. The Saint, on the other hand, the Saint soundtrack was great.
Everything about The Saint's great. That's just a great movie.
Oh, you're gonna be excited for this. Ethan Hawke is starring in a movie about a drone pilot.
We've convinced Ethan Hawke's a good actor.
Yes. Many people are convinced he's a good actor. Have you seen the Before Sunset series? He's really great in those.
Okay. What about in any movie that is, let's just say, of a higher budget? Are we sure he's a good actor in those movies?
Gattaca.
It's closed.
My brother-in-law will cape Gattaca. He loves Gattaca.
I really enjoy Gattaca. Like, I don't know if it was big budget, but Training Day is a really good movie to me. I don't think he's very good in it.
Dead Poets Society, he's got that one.
All right, but that was like 25 years ago.
All right, yeah, look at that part. Does Reality Bites qualify?
Yeah, that's fine.
Again, it was like 20 years ago, though.
Yeah.
Let me see, like, the big productions that he's been in. I know everyone's shouting Boyhood, but that was I don't think it was a small film because of how long it seems like it would cost a lot of movie to do a movie over 20 years. But,
right.
Have you seen The Getaway?
Yes. Oh my God.
Really?
I mean, easily one of, like, not counting those, like, straight to DVD or straight to sci-fi movies or whatever. Because there has to be a little bit of a budget and less of like a, hey, we're trying to make a bad movie just to get a movie out. But one of the five worst movies I've ever seen. It's really bad.
You know what he's great in? Lord of War.
Okay, I'll give you that. He's very good in Lord of War.
He's great in Lord of War. Yeah. Not so much in Assault on Precinct 13. That
movie.
Yeah, that one's...
My God.
That was pretty bad.
Not a... I wouldn't... If I was him... I'd try to scrub that from the IMDb page.
All right, so controversial. I didn't like Training Day.
I think that's fine. I really enjoy it.
I like the
it.
Scenes. I like Denzel Washington in Training Day.
I mean, the problem with Training Day, and especially with Denzel, is when you go watch American Gangster.
Yeah.
It's the exact same character.
Yeah.
So that, like, I mean, I guess that kind of hurts it. But if you put it on its own, like, there's some really good scenes. Like, scenes in the house with the, like, there's no spoiler, right? It came out, like, 2001. The scenes in the house with the guy who's, like, giving them tips throughout, and then they have to, like, bust him on his stuff to, and they end up, like, shooting him in the chest. I think they shoot one of the cops to, like, make it look like they were defending themselves. Like, that scene's excellent. There's some really good scenes in that movie. Maybe put together, not a great movie. I still really enjoy it. But I also think Ethan Hawke's terrible in it.
So, this probably will not make you happy then. Counting films have already been out. According to Wikipedia, 1, 2, 3. He's slated for 9 films this year.
9?
He's in 9 movies.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. Get ready for a lot of Ethan Hawke in your life. Did you know they're rebooting Transporter?
Wait, like, without Jason Statham?
Yeah.
Okay.
The Transporter Refueled. It's on my Apple iTunes trailer app.
Who is it?
Ed Skrein?
Do I know who Ed Skrein is?
It's not Ed Sheeran. I already thought that was who it was, and it is not.
Okay, this guy looks British.
He
really does look British. I don't want to be rude, but...
Apparently he's going to star in Deadpool next year, along with Ryan Reynolds. Yeah, he's been, like, nothing.
Okay. Well, I think if you're going to do it, you need someone who hasn't been anywhere.
I'm trying to contain my excitement about the new Hitman movie.
To be fair, now that Jason Statham has joined the Fast Furious franchise, there's really no reason for him to go back to his petty work before.
That's true. That's true. Much like Kurt Russell.
Right.
He's doing so much before.
If they do, like, an Escape from Seattle.
So, explain... All right.
Cap him out.
Ronda Rousey's in this one, right? Because somebody was telling me that she got thrown out of a plane in the last one.
No. No, that was Gina Carano or whatever her
name
is.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's not the same person.
Yeah, I'm really excited for Ronda Rousey. I was like, I love Ronda Rousey. She's amazing. I don't remember her in Fast 6 at all.
Yeah.
Oh, have you seen the trailer for San Andreas?
I have. Out of nowhere. Like, me, I'm a Carla Gugino? I can't remember. I can never know how to pronounce her name. I'm a fan of hers. She's amazing in Snake Eyes. But... there's the slow build with her, and there's all this destruction. Then all of a sudden, The Rock's driving a helicopter. Well, I guess you fly a helicopter. He's flying a helicopter just out of nowhere. It's like, yeah, I'll buy him as a medic. Most medics make sure that they, you know, load up on HGH and arm butter before they go out for a run.
It's awesome. So good. So I know that a good friend of the program, Robbie Callen, is coming down for the premiere of Fast 7.
Excuse me, it's Furious 7.
My apologies.
Fast 5, Fast 6, Furious 7.
Furious 7, because beyond Fast is Furious is the tagline, right?
No, the tagline is they don't have friends, they have family.
Oh, God. Are you guys going to try and watch all of them before?
That seems like it would be a plan.
There's got to be a marathon going on. Yeah,
there was a marathon on TBS, I think, the other day, or maybe some cable channel, but it's just, no offense to our partners for the March Madness, it's just not the same if it's edited.
Yeah.
Not even, like, the swearing or whatever, like, it's just the commercials really do break it up. No, I'm not a fan of that. You get one commercial between each movie, and it should be for the Furious 7 trailer.
Yeah. Okay. Good pod.
Good pod. I will talk to you later. You can follow our stuff. I don't know. CBSSports.com, CBS Sports NBA, iTunes reviews, 4 or 5 star reviews. Subscribe, all that stuff.
And it's your choice. It's your choice. You can either give us a 4 or a 5. We don't want to pressure you.
Which yeah, I don't think they allow anything under that.
They don't really.
No. So
those other buttons just don't go anywhere.
No need to even click them.
It's true.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Greg.